because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God
bless you. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's summary of this week in the Capitol and in all politics all the time. Right, J.R.? Washington.
It is the season.
Yeah. Green Bay State Convention tomorrow of the Republican Party. Yep. Let's get into all these political issues this way. Five things to watch at the Republican State Convention tomorrow in Green Bay. First question, how unified will the delegates, 800, 900, 1,000, be in support of Donald Trump?
It's actually a question, especially in light of what happened last week where Paul Ryan said he wasn't ready yet to endorse the presumptive nominee. Hasn't sealed the deal yet, but he's almost there. Then in interviews on Monday, Wisconsin media, including I went down and talked to him, he kind of is deferring to Trump. It's his convention, whatever he wants. He wants to step out of here, I'll do that. I just want to hear more. I want to get behind this guy. You can tell that Ryan is working to get there, but he wants some kind of either concessions or some assurances that he's going to tone down the rhetoric on Muslims, for example, or on Hispanics, et cetera. So I get the impression that, you know, especially in Wisconsin, because remember, we were the beachhead of the anti-Trump movement, if you will. The groups that came in to try and get Cruz, kind of get momentum behind him, we were really the ground zero for that. And so we may be a little bit more fractured or have a harder time getting past those emotions than other states maybe. So we'll see. But what's been interesting in the last few days is watching these conservatives, you have the kind of the conservative intellectual elite, if you will, who are still, Trump would be a disaster, we are not going to vote for this guy. We have more Republican candidates, party officials saying, we're getting behind Trump because reality is he's our nominee. And if he gets wasted this fall, it's going to affect down ballot. So they may not like him or even agree with him, but they need him to do as well as possible to prevent them from being wiped out at state houses and congressional seats, et cetera.
But the goal of state GOP chair Brad Courtney and party executive director Mike Duffy is to try to achieve as much unity as possible tomorrow in Green Bay, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, you saw Scott Fitzgerald come out and say, we're on the Trump train now, right away. Robin Voss, though, a little more cautious. Governor Walker has said he'll support the nominee, but he isn't doing cartwheels about Donald Trump.
Right.
So you don't really see an enthusiasm, if you will, but more of a reality setting in for some Republicans of this is our nominee, how do we operate in this environment?
Tommy was all Kasich all the time. Where's he now? Do you know?
He's a delegate for Cruz, which is interesting to watch how that's going to happen. I have not talked to him to know where he has that for Trump, but you can tell, again, that conservative electoral elite, you know, what are they going to do? Will the talk radio host in Milwaukee, will they come around eventually? I don't know if they will. That's a big problem.
I listened to Charlie Sykes open his show today. He is not coming around, my friend.
And those guys bang the drum for the activists to get out in southeastern Wisconsin. Those are hardcore conservatives who go out and vote. If they're not going to go out and vote, that's a problem for Trump unless he can find votes somewhere else.
Okay. Question number two. How will Cruz backers thank their candidate who won in the April primary? Let's go back to that April 5 primary. Cruz racked up 48%, Trump 13%, and Kasich the rest. So you're going to have a lot of Cruz fans on the floor of that convention tomorrow. How are they going to thank their guy now that he's out? I mean, they're going to bring – they were for Cruz on April 5. They're going there. We still think Cruz is a better choice.
Good question, because there are Cruz delegates for the national convention. Maybe some of those guys will be there tomorrow. But, you know, Scott Fitzgerald a week ago said, we should release all these delegates or have Cruz release them so we all vote for Trump.
And Cruz won't.
I don't think that's going to happen. Interesting to note that Cruz out in Texas seems to be fighting for delegates down there. He wants to be able to force some issues in the convention floor to try and build a conservative plank, if you will, planks into the platform. So that'll be interesting to watch. I don't know the average person is going to really get into that kind of stuff. But it's an interesting battle for the soul of the Republican Party of, okay, Trump's our nominee, but where's our heart? Where are our beliefs as a party right now?
So I'll be looking for how those Cruz delegates, whether it's with buttons, show that thank you to their candidate. Question three, how will delegates respond to the mention of U.S. Speaker Paul Ryan, who is not going to talk to the convention, but he's flying in the middle of the afternoon, and he'll talk to a closed banquet tomorrow night?
Yeah, the county chair's annual banquet on Saturday. There'll be a lot of people there. Ryan, it's interesting because Sarah Palin tried to suggest this guy's getting cantered, quote-unquote. But then you go look, there's a pullout, I think, late
Remington.
Wednesday.
Yeah.
That we picked
up on. You
guys
had it on your newsletter.
Yep. That, you know, he's at 78%. This guy, Nalen's at 14. That's not really a guy in trouble right now. And one of the issues is if you look at the opposition to Ryan's from people who are outside the district, they're not really people who are in Kenosha, Racine counties, southern Walworth County, or sorry, western, eastern Walworth County, southern Waukesha. That's not where you're seeing the heart of the anti-Ryan stuff. It's all from outside the district. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying he's like universally loved down there, but do I see him in trouble right now? No, I don't see trouble for Paul Ryan. He's loved in Wisconsin.
Okay, prediction. When he addresses the closed banquet tomorrow night at the convention, he gets a standing O. Agree? He's very popular.
He's going to, well, I should say, he's loved in Wisconsin by Republicans, not necessarily by everybody, but by Republicans for sure. Saturday night, he will probably talk about what he's been talking about on the trail, the positive vision he wants to offer from Republicans, how he wants us to be looking forward as a party, all these kinds of things about, which is basically where Trump is not. All these, he went and talked to young voters a week and a half ago and said, you know, we want to be a positive, welcoming party with a vision for the future. And yep. I asked him about this on Monday, are you hearing that in the primary? And he kind of danced around the topic, but the answer really is no, you're not hearing that in the primary. And that's an issue where Ryan's in a different spot than where this presidential race has been.
Okay, question four. How will Ron Johnson, Governor Walker, Assembly Speaker Voss, Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, in their speeches, they're going to speak tomorrow morning, will they avoid Donald Trump?
I'm sure they'll bash Hillary Clinton, so I'm pretty sure about that.
Yeah.
And Obama. So I'm sure that Ron Johnson will take shots at Obama and Clinton and Russ Feingold. Will he really go out there and give Donald Trump a bear hug? I don't know. You know, it's a good question how they're going to do that dance. But for some Republicans, it is not necessarily they love Trump, but they hate Clinton. And is that a motivating factor to get out there this fall? I remember this in the recall election in 2012, the 2014 re-election for Governor Walker. I'd ask about this, and Democrats say, well, you know, people just don't like this guy. You know, it's going to drive people out. But hatred is not doesn't really motivate people. Positive message, vision does. Walker was dead on about that in 12 and 14. He offered a positive message, also tore down his opponent.
Yeah.
But, you know, not liking somebody is not the best motivator in politics for people to go out and vote. So, you know, I don't know that despising Clinton would be enough to help Donald Trump in Wisconsin.
Final question. Do you think the GOP leaders who we'll be interviewing and talking to tomorrow are worried about a low turnout with Trump leading the ticket in Wisconsin?
I'm sure that's part of the issue. Well, of course, there's two sides of that coin. One, we've been at 3 million people for roughly the last two presidential elections. Clinton has high negatives as well. Does that mean we'll be at both sides will have some, you know, drop off in turnout? We'll be at 2.8 million, 2.7. You know, where is that going to be? Who sits this out? Will it be Sanders backers? I mean, Dems have an issue too with Bernie Sanders backers not being very happy about how the nomination process is going, and like they're shut out of the convention. So, will that be an issue? You know, Republicans are having a little more time right now to kind of come to grips, if you will, with what's happening. The Dems may take more time, and that can be something to watch as well about what happens there. But yeah, I definitely say that Republicans have an issue of Donald Trump is not popular with suburban women. I mean, you go on down the list of people that they need to turn out. Well, you see a surge in Hispanic voters, for example, nationally this fall. African-American voters. I mean, he's offended a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So what do they do? But again, just because you hate somebody, is that a reason to turn out? Clinton has to provide a positive message, positive vision, if you will, get people on board.
Let's talk about how our two organizations are going to cover the state convention. Wisconsin and I will live stream all the convention speeches, and I'll be doing one-on-one interviews with leaders. Talk to us about the straw poll and what
we'll have a
politics
straw poll running of delegates. I've come back to our convention blog this afternoon. We'll have the question posted. We'll be covering every speech on the floor, writing it up, talking to delegates, doing stories. We're kind of wall-to-wall coverage, if you will. This is one of our Super Bowls, if you will, of the year for these conventions.
Okay, new topic. It struck me this week. This was the week that Governor Walker said, you know, I've pretty much had enough with no confidence votes mm-hmm. by the faculty and I think four or five of the four-year UW systems. The governor's statement, some faculty bodies appear more interested in protecting outdated job-for-life tenure than about helping students get the best education possible. The university should not be about protecting the interests of the faculty, but about delivering value and excellence to Wisconsin. And here's somebody who's paying tuition at UW-Madison for one of his sons. I was struck by the tone of the governor's statement. Were you?
A little bit, yes. Also by the reaction from the Milwaukee faculty saying that all your numbers are wrong, Governor, or misleading. So late yesterday, Ray Cross, I don't know if people picked up on this, but issued a statement about 6:30-ish or so, that how these great things happen at UW-Milwaukee. There was this celebration yesterday. instead of celebrating what's happening here about being a top-tier research university,
yes,
we're talking about this heated rhetoric and
misleading information is what Ray Cross said.
So it's a little bit of a jab at both sides of, like, let's pull back here and get focused on a positive message for this system, if you will.
But let's go back. Yes, Ray Cross made that statement yesterday. Mm-hmm. But earlier in the week, the State Journal reported on his email in which he sided with Walker, saying, tenure is designed to protect freedom of speech and the right to pursue truth, no matter how unpopular, and then to publish that information without worrying about being dismissed for doing so. It is not a guarantor of a job for life.
Mm-hmm.
So the UW faculty members who've been voting no confidence couldn't be impressed with this email that was just surfaced from Mr. Cross.
Oh, no. I mean, remember we've talked before that Cross is in this kind of impossible situation of the university's had a bad relationship with Republicans for a long time. He's trying to kind of build a bridge with those guys. And the faculty feel like you're not fighting hard enough because you're sucking up to those guys. We want you on our side as a warrior against these cuts, against these attacks on tenure in their mind. So he's kind of in this difficult situation where, what does he do?
Well, I think there are two larger issues. Number one, will the next state budget inflict another cut on the UW system? Number two, will the four-year freeze on resident undergraduate tuition be extended 5 or 6 more years because, oh yeah, the governor would like to seek re-election, and these are the 2 years leading up to that. So I think those are the context of this deepening rift between faculty and our policymakers up in the Capitol, right?
There could be another dive, if you will, and that is starting to legislate how much you have to teach if you're on the faculty at UW. If you look at Walker's statement, he's talking about how many students you're teaching versus your class load, these kinds of things, and the faculty and Crosby said, these guys don't understand what's going on. They are misinterpreting these stats or what's going on in the classroom. Research is an important part of what faculty do. It'll be interesting to watch if they don't cut the UW, but they start trying to dig into, like, you have to spend X number of dollars on instruction or you have to teach this many classes a semester. That could be a very big problem because remember Walker talked about the last budget trying to do an Act 10 for the UW system. You know, the new flexibilities, all those kinds of things. Will he have a new Act 10, if you will, for UW in this next budget that digs into your teaching load if you're a faculty member?
Well, and one sign of that, he could very easily do that given how the UW faculty members continue to say, we have no trust in you, Mr. Walker, or Mr. Cross. But I also found it intriguing. Speaker Voss hinted that the UW maybe should get what they're getting now in state general purpose aid, which I looked it up. It's $1 billion a year.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very interesting. Okay, while we're on state finances, still another issue. I was surprised. The governor has gone around with Wisconsin Works, our unemployment is low, but then midweek, the DOA says we're going to take $101 million debt service payment that was due to be made on June 30th. We're going to push that out into future budget years, 8 years, mm-hmm. and it's going to cost an additional $2.27 million in interest. Now, how deep is the concern about the next set of tax collections and the state budget financial picture?
Well, I look at the monthly revenue numbers and ask him, Bob Lang at Fiscal Bureau, about them. And so far, he said there hasn't been anything to kind of cause any concern.
That was only through March.
That's
they haven't
true.
Released April. They're not going to release the April numbers till May 24th.
Yes.
I asked yesterday. Excuse
me
for interrupting.
So far, we seem to be okay. But the reality is we have a very small cushion. It's a $70-plus billion budget. Last check, the projected net surplus, so after our required balance, if you will, was $70 million. So $70 million out of $70 billion. There is no room for error, if you will. If Medicaid, for example, all of a sudden gets out of whack, if costs go up there, if collections drop, we don't have much of a cushion to go find money to make things work. So this is part of creating a short-term window or cushion, if you will, with some long-term pain. It's creating more flexibility just in case things don't go well. Now, here's the warning sign. We are in May of the first year of the biennium. That means we have full 13 months plus a couple weeks to go. If things trend down, there could be a bigger problem the back end of this budget.
Yeah, there could be.
To watch for.
Well, okay, when I first asked DOA about this 101 kick in the next fiscal years, they said it was prudent fiscal management, and the governor said, look, governors have been doing this since 2002, mm-hmm. and that was Republican Governor
McCallum. Doyle did it. I think Doyle's done it more, but he did it over a larger window. So,
right.
One more time, 8 years versus Walker in 6.
Yeah. But then, when the governor was asked about this in Milwaukee by reporters, he said, the bottom line is we have concerns about the Obama economy nationally, and we want to make sure Wisconsin's prepared for it. And the reason we're able to do that is we have the lowest level of bonding in some 20 years, although $850 million is bonded for transportation to continue our highway projects.
Yeah.
So the governor is blaming the Obama administration for this deferral?
And the Dems are asking, well, when's Walker going to take responsibility for anything with this? I mean, they're pointing out that we're in a relative time of growth nationally, and we have revenue is going up in Wisconsin. Not only is it going down, it's been going up, but we're having a hard time meeting our projections with, like, expenses. What's going on? Now, Medicaid, a huge issue.
Yep.
Yes, bonding is down. Walker's correct. But that's because he didn't do a building budget this time. He basically put all the bonding into transportation and skipped the vertical stuff. So there's a little bit more of the story than that, what's going on. And we've already been told for a while now, the next budget's going to be tough.
Yep.
It's not going to be an easy budget. Walker needs space. If he's going to run for election in 2018, he needs, you know, we know this. Every governor does the pain budget the first time, then the re-election budget the second time. The re-election budget should be the easy one, the one that's giving stuff out.
The one that you're
doing
proud of.
Programs.
The one that you run on.
Yes. So if it's going to be a tough budget, how do you run the tough budget? You know, what do you do there?
Okay, and to talk about Democratic legislators, excuse me, see an opening here, Senate Democratic Leader Schilling, this latest accounting gimmick will end up costing taxpayers millions over the next 8 years and result in less funding available for schools, roads, and worker training programs. Yeah, can you find me a voter on November 5 that really cares about debt service payments? No.
No, they care about their schools, their taxes, will they have a job, do they feel secure, those kinds of things. But this is part of the argument Dems are going to try to make that these guys have mismanaged government.
Yeah.
The theme you keep hearing over and over again is that these guys are so interested in keeping their jobs, they're not interested in helping you get a job. They're worried about John Doe. They're worried about campaign finance laws, all the doing with the GAB. All these things that aren't really important to you.
Yep.
They've been trying to consolidate power, and this is the result. Now, if they can make that tie, it could be a potent argument. They have to make that kind of connection, if you will.
Okay. New subject. Connect these dots for me, JR. On Monday, there's a federal court trial alleging that our photo ID law, is parts of it, are unconstitutional. The Wednesday before the trial is set to begin, the governor says the Wisconsin Department of Transportation will now be issuing photo ID card receipts. Connect those dots.
Essentially, they're trying to show more structure, if you will, the process, and make it easier for people to get something, because this is part of what this lawsuit from Wisconsin Institute actually challenges a bunch of Wisconsin election laws that have been changed in Republicans the last 5 years. Part of it is a voter ID law. Remember, voter ID was approved. It was held up in court.
Yes.
The state Supreme Court approved or came back and found it constitutional, but the court added this caveat. You must find a way to give IDs for free for those who can't find, for example, their birth certificate or have
There's
to pay a copy for it. Something like that, because to them, that's with a poll tax. It's not, the ID was already free. If you have to pay for your birth certificate, that's in way of a poll tax.
Yep.
So they create this process. Part of this lawsuit, the federal lawsuit, says that process is arbitrary,
mm-hmm.
and they're not sticking to it or being fair with it, if you will. So it's one of many tangents in that suit. But this brings a little more structure to it and also says, okay, if you're having a hard time getting what you need, if you can't get it within process within 5 days, we'll give this receipt. You can use that to vote until everything's straightened out.
Right. And the governor said this, having the WISDOT issue the photo ID card receipts, ensures an individual is still able to vote while they work to obtain documentation needed for a free voter ID card. But Andrea Kaminsky of the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin, this proposal, which is clearly aimed, those are the dots she connected, at deflecting the current lawsuits in federal court, could help a small number of eligible citizens who are at risk of losing their vote, because of the voter photo ID law. It is a small positive development. Mm-hmm. I just found it very interesting. See you in court.
Remember, too, Republicans, when they passed this law, they went for the most restrictive version they could. They wanted an airtight voter ID law. Since they passed it, they've been doing these little caveats or like little changes to try and make it more palatable and hold up to court scrutiny. So they didn't have the process to get an ID if you don't have your birth certificate in the original law. The Supreme Court mandated that. They didn't have this in the original law. They came back and did it as a fix, if you will.
Okay. Next subject. I was so intrigued. I didn't know this, JR. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported that there are now, in 2015, 10,456 high-capacity wells in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And so That's why we're talking about it today, because this week, Attorney General Brad Schimmel issued an opinion which does not have the force of law, and he said that he kind of spanked DNR. And he said, DNR cannot put conditions on well applications that would take into account their cumulative effects on area streams, rivers, and lakes. 10,456 high-capacity wells. Well, this ruling throws it back to the legislature, and let's talk about what happened. You had State Representative Scott Krug work on this issue for months last session. Mm-hmm. Says, if I think we could have got there, but the Assembly still passed, I think, two bills. They died in the Senate. So the effect of this ruling is to make it four square one of the key issues coming up the next session. Agree?
Oh, absolutely. They couldn't get on the same page. What was interesting with Krug was he got a bill amended on the floor on high-capacity wells, and they voted against the bill.
Yes.
Because it didn't go far enough in his
mind.
But
it went over the Senate and
the Senate did a bill, its own bill, as a kind of a symbolic gesture toward the ag community of, we're listening, we're going to pay attention to this.
Yeah.
The question becomes, how do you balance those interests of the ag community with those lake homeowners, those on waterways are saying, we're seeing too many straws in the drink dry up this body of water. What's going on here? So that's part of the problem.
It's absolutely fascinating. Wisconsin has become one of the top producers of vegetables, and yet you have these concerns by residents. Streams are drying up, groundwater. So this is a huge issue, and it just became bigger with Schimmel's advisory opinion.
Especially in central Wisconsin where Krug is at, that's a huge issue up there that they got to deal with.
Okay, and let's look at how Speaker Voss responded, calling the Attorney General's opinion a victory for the people of Wisconsin, as it reinforces that their elected representatives create the laws of our state and not the unelected bureaucrats. But Clean Wisconsin Attorney Elizabeth Wheeler called it a huge step backward for protections we have for high-cap wells, especially to remove authority for the DNR to regulate cumulative effects. Now let's talk about the legislators involved. Mm-hmm. Senator Julie Lassa, Democrat, yes, from Stevens Point,
up for election
in the
this
middle
fall.
Of this debate, up for election. Representative Krug, up for election.
A top Dem target.
Assistant Assembly Democratic Leader Katrina Shanklin. Mm-hmm. She and Krug are like this on this issue. But what I also find intriguing, part of central Wisconsin, is Republican Representative Nancy Vandermeer. Just this week, Common Cause rated her district as one of the most competitive. Mm-hmm. So fascinating election implications for the whole high capacity, isn't it?
Oh, and Vandermeer also has a potential primary opponent, so it could be an issue for these guys. I mean, Dems are already talking about water issues with Krug up in the first district with Kitchens, for example. They're going to try to make this an issue this fall. So definitely, they're trying to target messages, if you will, a little bit from district to district. So,
and you want to talk groundwater issues, Kewaunee. I mean, mm-hmm, the amount of pollution in those wells up there. Fascinating. So it's a great issue, very complex, something that the next legislature will have to act on. No stock report this week?
Back next week with a vengeance.
Okay, with a vengeance. Before we go up to Green Bay, let's talk about two people, names in the news. Kevin Kennedy made it official. He'll be resigning June 29th. He has overseen state elections since 1982. But no surprise in his retirement announcement?
I've been asking him for, honestly, months about this. He kept putting me off until finally Monday he broke down and said, okay, we'll talk about it, and put it out Monday afternoon that he was going to retire. I mean, reality was there was no path for him to stay with the new Elections or Ethics Commissions, you know, because he became a lightning rod, if you will. He's also in his 60s. You know, he told me he wanted to stick to the 2016 election and see one last presidential race and then retire. But the way they did things, that made no, he's like, look, basically moved up by 6 months that I'm retiring for the new entity takes over. And honestly, if he'd applied for the jobs, I don't think he would have gotten one because he's such a lightning rod. And he told me that he doesn't have, because he had never served like in a staff position with the GAB, he would have had staff rights to go back to a staff position. So it was either apply for the administrator job, for example, with the Elections Commission, or retire. This just makes more sense to him.
Well, what intrigues me about this is GAB now has run orientation sessions for the Ethics Commission members and Elections Commissions, but Governor Walker has not yet made his final appointees. He's got two slots on which one? Elections? Both.
One Dem, one Republican. Remember, they put these two pools, one Dem pool, one Republican pool for each of the bodies. Final two picks, those aren't done yet, last I checked. Also, remember with Kennedy leaving, 33 years as the top elections official.
Yeah.
Jonathan Becker, who's been a longtime ethics official, he's retiring May 31st. It's a lot of experience that's leaving. that they'll have to replace or find a way to kind of move forward without those two after this.
I learned something. I didn't know Jonathan Becker is also retiring.
Mm-hmm.
He is.
That's been official for about a month or so now, yeah. Thanks. 30, yeah, a lot of decades of experience there. But in some ways, they maybe need that break to kind of start over because there's just such baggage anymore with the relationship between Republicans and those entities. It'll be kind of interesting to watch how they forge forward.
One more name in the news. In the weekend, the Mike Gushee interview, which you guys co-sponsor, mm-hmm. Former Supreme Court Justice Jeanine Gieske said, I'm tired of all this special interest money. I'm tired of all this. It's time to elect Supreme Court justices. She's the only one saying this, right?
I wouldn't hold my breath for Scott Walker or Robin Voss or Scott Fitzgerald to put a constitutional amendment to the table to change that because conservatives win. They win these races. I mean, they have no interest, no reason to do this. So no, I don't expect it to happen anytime soon.
And there's a third name in the news. If you're director of the State Fair Board, it's not a good idea to push through pay raises for you and some, because you will not have a job,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Right. Okay, we're off to Green Bay. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for this week.